Welcome to Believer Readers to another episode of Let's Read Spider-Man, the best podcast to break down hard-hitting dialogue such as, I gotta find a mirror. I have a feeling someone pinned a sign on my back saying, sucker. Here to provide analysis for that line, and so much more, is my friend Eddie. How are you today, Eddie?
I'm hanging in there. Got a lot going on, but, you know, here I am, podcasting about Spider-Man. And this is Peter Parker finding himself in a situation where he may not have read the fine print on a contract J. Jonah gave him, right?
I thought this was, he gets tricked by one of the characters we're going to talk about later.
Oh.
And he tells him, meet me at this place, and he doesn't show up there.
Oh, yes. You know, it certainly could have happened in several different locations.
Sure. Well, we're going to have four Amazing Spider-Man books, plus a bonus book in this issue. You're going to do the summaries on three of them. I'll do the summary on two of them. And without further ado, why don't you get us started so the listeners know what we're talking about.
From July of 1988, Stan Lee presents The Amazing Spider-Man 302, Mid-American Gothic, by Micheline and McFarlane.
Peter is checking out Online Industries in Emporia, Kansas. The construction boss, Wes Cassidy, is getting yelled at by Dr. Nero because the scientist's equipment is very fragile. Soon after, there is a danger at the lab with an explosion and some fire. Peter changes into Spider-Man and is ready to take action when he sees the construction boss, Wes Cassidy, using his own super speed to take care of the issue himself. Meanwhile in New York, Mary Jane worries Peter will accept that Kansas job, and Silver Sable learns her wild pack isn't strong enough to take out Nazi Franz Klaus from the previous book. She goes off to talk to the Sandman about a job. That's Silver Sable, not MJ. Spider-Man confronts Wes, who tells him he got his powers when a jackrabbit bit him. Dr. Nero, agitated at society or the government or something, I'm not really even sure, dons a souped-up riot suit and tries to rob the safe from Online Industries. Wes doesn't help stop him, because he doesn't want to reveal his identity there, but Spidey does. And the book ends with Peter telling MJ he wants to take the Kansas job.
MJ doesn't want to move to Kansas, though. She explains to Peter her home, her friends, her career, they're all in New York City. It's the first real strife in this marriage, I feel like. Other than, you know, like Venom scaring Mary Jane. Does she move to Kansas? Let's find out. From August of 1988, Stan Lee presents The Amazing Spider-Man 303, Doc Savage, by Micheline and McFarlane.
Yeah, and Doc is spelled D-O-C-K, like on the docks. Let's figure out why. Hey, we just talked about this. Peter wants to go to Kansas, but he knows Aunt May and MJ won't like it. While he ponders his decision, Silver Sable is recruiting Sandman to be part of the Wild Pack. Listeners, the Sandman is using his real name Floyd Baker in these books, not Flint Marco. I just wanted to point that out. Silver Sable puts an ad in the Daily Bugle for Spider-Man to meet her, and Spider-Man meets up and is recruited to join the mission for a handsome fee.
Speaking of fees, J. Jonah is once again furious that an ad for Spider-Man is being run in his paper. But when Silver Sable pays this massive fee, suddenly he's not so upset about Spider-Man things happening in his newspaper.
Speaking of getting paid, I like the idea of Spider-Man getting paid, but I feel like he almost never gets the money due to some reason or another. Still, he probably would have worked for free because the mission he's going to go on is a continuation of this same story to stop that Nazi, Franz Kraus, who also happens to be in this book selling drugs to Wilson Fisk, the kingpin of crime. Franz is also stockpiling weapons in order to launch the Fifth Reich of Nazism. Well, when Spider-Man wants additional help, but Sable and Sandman rush in, our hero reluctantly joins them. I found the book becoming more interesting at this point, as I enjoy the panels where Sable gives orders to Spider-Man. With the Nazis and all this teamwork, issue 303 has a Spider-Man and Captain America vibe, but with much less trustworthy companions. Actually, on second thought, 1988 Captain America hasn't been making the best choices with shady handlers and the tarantula and Spectacular Spider-Man. Maybe this isn't so much different. The issue quickly wraps up with a happy ending. The threesome put away the baddies, Silver Sable offers to pay Spider-Man cash in the morning since we know he can't take a check. And MJ offers to move to Kansas, but Peter says, no, let me go back to school and I'll find a job here in New York.
Good choice, Peter. I'm super happy Peter's going back to school. In his heart, he's an academic more than a photog. Would you agree with this, James B?
Yeah, I definitely think he's not a photographer at all. He takes the pictures just to make the money. He doesn't have any super inspirations. He's never like trying to set up amazing shots. He's just trying to set up shots that, you know, are passable. And he has a lot of, right. gets a lot of bad shots. He'll complain about his photos all the time. I can't imagine that his photos are even that good. Let's see if they come up at all in his next book. From September of 1988, Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 304, California Skeemin, by David Micheline, Todd McFarlane, and Joe Rubenstein.
Sly old J. Jonah Jameson has published a book of the Bugles Spider-Man pictures titled Webs without Peter's consent. Peter didn't read the fine print in his contracts very well. But when the company offers him a book tour and $25,000, he changes his tune.
Oh, yeah. And they also offer Spider-Man, through Peter, $1,000 for each appearance. As the money continues to be, of course, this motivating factor in all these 1988 Spider-Man books. Peter tells the reader he wants to do the tour as Peter Parker without Spider-Man, though.
After quick affirmations from Aunt May, he heads to Los Angeles with Mary Jane at his side. Upon arriving, they go to Disneyland and then to a gala event where a priceless artifact, the Valencia Chalice, is being displayed. But the Black Fox is also at the gala, and after subduing a bevy of security guards, the wily old fox gets his hands on the chalice. Now he can retire! Alas, Peter recognizes the villain as he strolled through the crowd, and Spider-Man complicates the fox's exit. But when Spidey takes a wrong turn, he finds himself prominently in front of the socialites at the gala. MJ quickly spins this into a promotional event for Peter's book. The Black Fox looks to have escaped until... the Prowler climbs through a window and takes the chalice from him.
Yeah, this is the new Prowler, the one that was the cat burglar back in Amazing Spider-Man 30. And then later he stole Hobie Brown's suit. At least that's how I think it is when I'm typing this after reading Amazing Spider-Man 304. I guess I won't find out for sure until I read the next book. And it's from October of 1988. Stanley presents The Amazing Spider-Man 305, Westward Woe, by David Micheline, Todd McFarlane, and inks by the Magnificent 7 Plus.
After signing some autographs at the gala, Spider-Man crashes through a window to stop the Prowler from making off with the chalice the Black Fox recently stole. As Spidey and the Prowler tangle, the Black Fox slips away with the chalice in hand. Spider-Man is about to turn the Prowler, Hobie Brown, in until the Prowler tells him his wife Mindy is in danger and he needs the ancient chalice to save her. Hobie tells Spidey to meet him at his hotel the next day.
Okay, so it is Hobie Brown. Sorry. I went to the internet to see what I did wrong because I was pretty sure that that was not Hobie Brown. And I ended up listening eventually to Let's Read Spider-Man 156 with a book that was written 8 years earlier, Eddie. I don't know if you remember this already, but it looks like that cat burglar guy that I was talking about actually gets arrested in Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man 48. And I guess Hobie got his... suit back.
I think he rebuilds it is what he does, but I can't remember why exactly.
It did say the difference is that the cat burglar doesn't use the cape. It seemed to be about it. So, well, okay.
Well, as I mentioned, Hobie tells Spider-Man to meet him at his hotel the next day, but he's... not there. Peter sits forlorn on Laguna Beach with Mary Jane, having been tricked by Hobie Brown and unable to find the Black Fox. MJ boosts his spirits with a swim, and after a book signing, he is further buoyed when he makes a surprise appearance on The Tonight Show.
Yeah, see, this is the scene where he talks about having the sucker sign on his back because he got tricked by Hobie. Eddie, Peter was asked to do the Tonight Show because Charles Nelson Reilly canceled. I assure you, everyone over 45 knows exactly who I'm talking about.
Yeah, I'm not over 45, and I don't know who you're talking about. Well, that night, Spider-Man snoops around Transcorp. This is the corporation Hobie mentioned his wife was in trouble with, and finds the Prowler. After explaining he needs a chip hidden in the chalice to save his wife from being wrongly convicted for shady stock deals the company made, Spider-Man decides to forgive Hobie and help him. The duo figure out that Transcorp knows the Black Fox is at the docks trying to slink away. Together, they go to the docks, where they subdue some Transcorp goons and catch the Black Fox. The Black Fox gives Spider-Man a sob story, and Spidey lets him go. Hobie Brown exonerates his wife, while MJ and Peter continue the book tour.
Yeah, Peter lets the Black Fox and Hobie Brown both go free in this book. So much trust. Hasn't Peter learned anything in 8 years, or is he like me and just can't keep track of this stuff?
No, he is not. But he is certainly living the high life. He's on tour for his book, and he's staying in these nice hotels, Laguna Beach with Mary Jane. Wow, this is like some of the best circumstances I think we've ever seen Peter Parker in.
So, Eddie, we've got an Iron Man book I want to talk about. Oh, we've got a sponsor we need to deal with. And then we've got these books to talk about a little bit more. What do you want to do in what order?
Let's, hear from our sponsor. It's important. And then maybe some Iron Man after that.
All right, Eddie, today our sponsor is a book that you might be familiar with. It's a book with a lot of photographs about Spider-Man. And here we go. Eddie, do you like photos? How about a book of action photos? Fighting is contagious. This universal human emotion startles a soul, causing troubled thoughts. From Spider-Man's fist breaking Doc Ock's glasses to Kraven's bloody corpse, each photograph in webs offers a reminder that we live in the most chaotic of times. These beautiful photos are complemented by poignant quotes from J. Jonah Jameson himself. An Introduction to Pain is a special section by Dr. Jonas Harrow, providing the reader with a brief yet thorough understanding of the concept of pain and what it means at the start of this collection of beautiful photos. Pick up webs at your local retailer.
All right, well, I guess I could pick that up because
it's a book of Spider-Man photos, Eddie.
It's a book of Spider-Man photos, so that sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Wow, James B. I'm kind of excited about the sponsor, I guess.
Cool. You and your daughters can sit around, look at pictures of Spider-Man, you know, standing over Kraven's bloody corpse. Have a good time with that.
Bloody corpse.
Pay more attention to the sponsors. Before we go and talk about this Iron Man book, which took place around the same time as these books here,
yes.
What did you think of these stories? I mean, there's no Venom in it. There's no Doc Ock running around. But also, there's at least something going on with Silver Sable and Sandman. How do you feel?
You know, there's two things that I really enjoy in these books. I'm quite happy to have Peter go to other cities. I think it's clearly used as a way to try to draw in a crowd from, you know, one city or another, whichever he's in. And we know he's been to, you know, Pittsburgh. He's been to Detroit. But it's super fun not only to have him be there and see landmarks and things, but also to see these New York writers talk about, you know, Los Angeles and California. And later on, we're going to see him in a couple of different cities. Do you like him moving around the country for the book tour?
You know, I was really undecided for a while about this. And then in the end, I thought, yeah, I think it's good because I'm probably tired of him having the same old situations where he's always at the docks or he's always fighting in an alleyway. So I think it is kind of nice to have him go meet another superhero who happens to be in Kansas. It's more believable that there's a superhero hanging around out there. And there's other companies, whether they're good or bad, like Online Industries or Transcorp, that aren't just based in New York. And they found a way to use characters, some in New York and some out of New York, that probably aren't super important to the stories that are outside of the Spider-Man universe, like Hobie Brown and Silver Sable. They're able to keep people in there who I care about. So I thought that was good. Go ahead.
Yeah, it gives them a lot of flexibility to really experiment with different ideas and different just different things that could occur in the cities. You know, like, it's harder for Spider-Man to, like, use his powers in Kansas than it is in New York City. There's just not as much stuff he can web to.
And MJ's ability to be on these trips, it's never clear if she's on the ship because she's also modeling or she's also just rich, or she was getting to go on the ship because she's married to him. But having her be able to pop up in these cities is great, because he couldn't do that if she didn't know his secret and they weren't married. So that made that all much more possible.
Yeah, you know, like, my other thing that I'm just really enjoying is the McFarlane illustrations. Have you noticed them, James B?
Yeah, I've noticed them. I like them more than I thought I would. I thought I was going to be completely turned off by them.
Me too.
And we did read, you and I, the Amazing Books and the Web Books and Spectaculars all at the same time for this show and the next show. And Mary Jane and Peter are drawn so drastically different in all the books that it's a little jarring, but it's so different in all the books that it becomes expected. Like, oh, well, just another person drawing Peter Parker the way they want.
Right. Yeah, McFarlane, for me in particular, the way he draws faces and kind of the, you know, the mannerisms of Peter Parker and the Black Fox when we see him in 304 and 305 again, they're just so detailed and really pull me into what's going on. It's nice to have like a new era of Spider-Man. I like that McFarlane's, you know, here and he's staying here, and it's like very clearly like his work that we're going to get in Amazing for now and into the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of the, we talked about this right away, the web being so intricately detailed. It looks so much stronger. I'm like, this web could actually support Spider-Man as opposed to these little strings that, you know, we've grown up with before. But these books take place in a lot of different cities, and we're going to jump to an Iron Man book, which takes place, I believe, in yet another city. I'm not even sure which city it is, but I don't think it's New York. If it is, please correct me when you do the summary.
Okay.
But the next book is an Iron Man book, and it's from May of 1988. Stanley presents Iron Man 234 Fallout, written by David Michelinie and Bob Layton, penciled by Jackson Geis, and inked by Bob Layton.
Peter is at the 31st Annual Conclave of Electronics Engineers and Innovators, where Tony Stark is showing off Stark Enterprises' versatile new Iron Man. By the way, I'm pretty sure this is in New York. Incognito, the radioactive man, is also presenting and gets excited when he notices Peter's bioradiation signature. Radioactive man tracks down and captures Spider-Man easily. This is because he's able to sap Spider-Man's strength by pulling the radioactive out of him, I guess. Before Radioactive Man can run tests and cut open our webbed hero, Iron Man arrives, freeing Spider-Man. Spidey dons a radioactive-proof suit, and together, Iron Man and Spider-Man freeze Radioactive Man and fly home. Seems like a man made of radiation walking around would be a bit of a public health crisis, but that's what the disguised Radioactive Man is doing.
I suppose so. It doesn't seem to set anybody off at any times. And I'm not even sure what his plan is here. But yes, I agree. It looks like it's in New York. Spider-Man shows up because he's kind of taking a day off, really. He's just like, I'm going to swing by and use my press pass to sneak into this place and save a couple bucks and walk around because I'm a science geek. Because he's not a photographer, Eddie, because he's a science geek, not a photo geek, right?
That's right.
Yeah, he doesn't even sign up for the photography class he's always threatening to, but he walks right into the science expos. Eddie, this feels so much more mature than a Spider-Man book. I know this is something we've talked about before, but I want to reiterate that both Tony and Rhodey are dating someone in a very mature, also flexible relationship status, that they're flirting and hitting on women. You saw that, right?
Yeah, that's what's going on here, right?
Yes, they're both, you know, someone's like, excuse me, miss, and she's like, Mrs., and then he's like, Tony's like, hey, Rhodey, what were you talking to that girl about? And he's like, well, I'm in a flexible relationship with, you know, with Marcy or whatever. And then they have these paying jobs.
Right.
They watch the news. They talk directly to the police and the government. They have people that work beneath them. It's such a different world than, you know, Mrs. Muggins sweeping at Peter with her broom.
Right.
I really enjoyed the change of pace in this book, seeing that. I know that Iron Man's not usually one of our favorites. However, we have done a couple things with the Kingpin and Daredevil. So I'm going to tell you right now, listeners, I'm going to schedule us for an Iron Man special because we're coming up on Let's Read Spider-Man 250 shortly. Woo-hoo. And we did Daredevil 225. I got an Iron Man special from 1987 or so, Eddie, that I think you're going to really enjoy.
I love these crossovers. It gives us more depth to like the full story when things like this happen.
And speaking of crossovers, listeners, I try to go ahead and keep my eye open for books that Spider-Man's appearing in. I know it's going to get out of control busy pretty soon, but right now, I saw this book. I thought it was a good chance to squeeze it in. Eddie, I don't know why Spider-Man's in this book, except that he has radioactive blood. I know that from the 1967 song that, you know, we know that was played at the during the Kevin Ewing podcast, like, right? That's why he's here.
Well, I think Radioactive Man sees his bioradiation as being something super valuable. And that's why he wants to, like, operate on him. And he thinks he can use it to increase his own radioactive power or something like that. So,
but this is a one-shot.
It is a one-shot.
It literally ends with them saying, like, well, everything worked out, the end.
Tony Stark's like, oh, we caught the bad guy, and, you know, I'm selling Iron Man to blah-blah-blah.
Yeah, I think you're buying this book in 1988 because you're a Spider-Man fan, and they're hoping that you're going to read this and be like, hey, you know what? I want to know how it works out between Tony Stark and that woman who was in his apartment. You know, the one he said, I'll call you, I got your number. So...
Yeah, try to pull us in. Just saying. It's true.
I think Amazing Spider-Man, even though there's not a lot of oomph in these books, there is just, in general, always something special about the Amazing Spider-Man books. As much as sometimes I get excited about a Spectacular Spider-Man book or what's going on in a Web of Spider-Man book, Amazing Spider-Man really doesn't let you down even when it lets you down. So these books were just fine. I was happy with them. And I was glad to see Peter on this Web's tour. Books I've never read, and, you know, I think I'll remember these books for a while. How about you?
Yeah, same for me. It's nice because it's leading. I can feel like I'm going somewhere when they have this book tour that's going to continue. So they've made it clear that I'll be traveling to different cities and obviously getting in more adventures here or there. So something to look forward to.
Yeah, and I also think that nothing really, with the exception of the Radioactive Man in the Iron Man book, these villains, they all, like, Hobie Brown just went back to his business. The Black Fox at the end was sort of like, hey, I got away too. I'll do this crime again. He didn't bother the superhero in Kansas. They didn't catch the Nazi yet. Like, nothing really happened in these books, right?
No.
Like, everything, status quo remains the same. So these books are good, but nothing really happened. If you want to complain to us about these books that we think are pretty good, how can people reach us, Eddie?
You can email us at letsreadspiderman@gmail.com or click on the link in the podcast description to join our Discord channel and connect with us through social media.
Haven't had a new emailer in a while, by the way. It's been kind of quiet. Our numbers have ticked up a little bit, so there's like 11 or 12 more people listening to us. One of these people, shoot us a message and tell us that Eddie's doing a great job, and I'll pass it over to him. He gets very excited, too.
It's true.
All right. Listeners, it's time for the close, and I'm James B., joined by
Eddie.
And remember, listeners, if Spider-Man tries to stop you from committing a crime,
simply swear on your mother's grave or use your poor framed wife for an excuse.
And Spider-Man will let you go.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
It is amazing that he lets them both go.
Especially the fox. The fox
he's already let the fox go one time. And the fox said, I'll never do that again.
It might have been the clothes last time too, because he does this all the time. Yes. He lets the fox, and the fox is trying to get this place in like the Riviera. He's always talking about he wants to retire, but he can't quite retire because he never quite has the money. And I think he's on a plane at the end. I think he's finally...
He's drinking champagne. He's like swearing on my mother's grave not to steal anymore. Mom will get such a laugh when I tell her.